Hello and welcome to the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. I'm here today talking with James Gibbons, market development manager for Airvo Home Care at Fisher & Paykel Healthcare, about nasal high flow therapy, which is opening up new revenue opportunities for respiratory providers. James, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, David. How about yourself? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing great, and welcome to the podcast. I'm glad you're here. I'm very interested in nasal high flow because this is creating new business opportunities. But maybe we can start at the basics. James, what is nasal high flow?
Yeah. So it's a great question because when people think about nasal high flow, I think that they're just based on the way it's been used in the past, it gets pigeonholed as a product that's typically used in the acute setting in the hospital. But before we get to some of the emerging evidence that's come out as far as kind of changing the way that people are viewing nasal high flow, I guess I can break down what nasal high flow actually is. And so nasal high flow combines a few core mechanisms to deliver a powerful therapy that is well tolerated by patients across a wide variety of disease states and different modalities within the hospital. And so just to kind of break each of those mechanisms down, there's really four core mechanisms. There's airway hydration, respiratory support, patient comfort, and supplemental oxygen. So if you don't mind, I'd like to just spend a little bit of time on a couple of those mechanisms to help our listeners better understand what that really means for the patient as they're utilizing nasal high flow. Is that all right with you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. So starting with the first mechanism, airway hydration, really what we're referring to is optimal humidification. And optimal humidification is referring to 37 degrees, 44 milligrams per liter, fully saturated gas at 100% relative humidity. And when you have optimal humidification delivered to the patient, what you're going to get is improved mucus clearance. It's going to maintain the natural balance of heat and moisture in the airway. It's going to prevent desiccation of the airway epithelium, and it's going to enable the comfortable delivery of high flows. And so with those benefits to the patients, when you're talking about patients that have disease states such as COPD, cystic fibrosis, mucositis, bronchiectasis, just to name a few, a lot of these patients have impaired secretion clearance. The natural body should humidify the airway on its own to provide that mucus clearance and that airway hydration, but It's compromised in these patients. So what you have is you have a dried airway to a patient that's already having other comorbidities reside within their lungs and in their body, to where that mucus clearance isn't happening as it should. So it's important with nasal high flow that you deliver that adequate humidity so that it's moving all those foreign particles out. Otherwise, you present the opportunity for infection, general patient discomfort, or even the opportunity for issues with respiration and gas exchange, which I'll get to in the next mechanism. But that just really speaks to the importance of having optimal humidification to make sure that the airway and that epithelial is constantly moving to humidify that mucociliary transport system. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Great. So in tandem with airway hydration and optimal humidity, another core mechanism of nasal high flow is respiratory support. And respiratory support can really be broken down into two subcategories, the first of which is dynamic positive airway pressure. Again, when we're talking about patients that have COPD, bronchiectasis, things of that nature, the way that gas exchange occurs in the body is inefficient. And so what respiratory support does in dynamic positive airway pressure is it's promoting slow, deep, even breaths. And so it's going to slow their respiratory breath, promote slow, deep breathing so that the gas exchange is more even and more efficient. In addition to that, you also have the washout of the anatomical dead space, so there's not a retention of CO2. A lot of patients that have diseases like COPD are CO2 retainers. And that's because they don't have those even breaths to where they're able to blow off that CO2 during expiration. So with respiratory support and nasal high flow, upon inspiration, you're going to have a very easy breath in, so that air is going to be driven down into the alveoli and exchange that gas. And then upon expiration, you'll have that nasal resistance that provides enough time for that CO2 to blow off, so there's an even distribution of oxygen and CO2 in the lungs. So those are the two core mechanisms, but in addition to those mechanisms, another key feature of nasal high flow is patient comfort. And as you know, David, no matter how efficacious a medication can be, it's only driven by the compliance of the patient to utilize that medication or that device or that product. And mm-hmm. so with nasal high flow, one of the key features that this employs is, as opposed to wearing a full face mask or a BiPAP mask, things of that nature where the patient's essentially closed off to the world around them, nasal high flow is going to deliver those warm, comfortable gases via nasal cannula or via tracheostomy interface if the situation dictates that. And so by using a nasal cannula, not only is it an open system so the patient can interact, talk, eat, drink with the family around them, but it also is going to help mitigate any issues with claustrophobia as well. So this should lead to better compliance, which ultimately should lead to better results, assuming that the product is efficacious for the patient.
Gotcha.
And so that's, in a nutshell, that's what nasal high flow is. It can be used with or without supplemental oxygen, depending upon the patient's circumstance. But when you combine airway hydration, respiratory support, and that patient comfort factor, it leads to a product that patients adhere to, but then also can provide a lot of benefits for them as well.
Gotcha. So, and really, so it's helping clear out their lungs and then helping their lungs perform better. Is that like an oversimplification?
Yeah. No, I think that's a very good way to put it. That's exactly what it's doing.
So, so now, nasal high flow is new, or at least sort of new, to the home care environment, but it's something that's been in hospitals, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so it's been used in the hospital for decades, really. And it's just emerging now in the home space. But specific to the hospital, a lot of times where it's been used up until just recent years is in the ICU, the intensive care portion of the hospital. And a lot of it has been, the therapy has been seen as something that is used for oxygen delivery and respiratory support. So really just the patient comes in an emergency situation, they're desatting, they need a lot of oxygen, so they pump up the oxygen, give them 80, 90% FiO2, maybe even 100, as well as hit them with the flow to get their breathing under control and basically rescue the patient. And so that's typically how it's been used in the hospital. But even, you know, in the hospital setting, there are new ways that it's being utilized along with in the home and post-acute care that have kind of changed the way people are viewing nasal high flow.
What's causing them to change their point of view? Is there new research?
Yes. Yeah. And I appreciate you bringing that up. So that's one of the core drivers, is some of the new research that's come out. So to that point that I was referencing earlier, as far as how it's being used in the ICU and the emergency department, that's where all the research had resided up until the last five years or so. And so one particular landmark study that just came out in April of last year, it was published by Storgard, and it was published in the International Journal of COPD. What it looked at was, it was a prospective randomized trial in 200 COPD patients with chronic hypoxemic respiratory failure, and it compared nasal high flow with long-term oxygen to just the control group, which is just predominantly long-term oxygen. So in that patient population, up until now, in post-acute care, the standard of care was long-term oxygen. So essentially what they did was they tested long-term oxygen versus long-term oxygen in tandem with nasal high flow. And so over a year's time, basically what these patients were asked to do was to utilize nasal high flow with long-term oxygen at airflow rates of 20 to 25 liters per minute and oxygen, just 1 to 2 liters of oxygen, for a goal of 8 hours within a 24-hour period. And what they, you know, what they ended up actually doing was they were using it a lot of times at night, just because compliance is better at night when they're sleeping. So at the end of the study, what they found was they were measuring exacerbation rates, hospital admission rates, and several other quality of life metrics for secondary outcomes. What they found was that even at these lower flow rates, 20 to 30 liters per minute, and then 1 to 2 liters of oxygen, there was a significant reduction in the number of exacerbations these patients were having. In fact, it was a 37% reduction. So then the control group, per patient per year on average, it was 4.95 exacerbations compared to the high flow group, which was 3.12. So again, that's a 37% reduction. And then moreover to that, which I find extremely interesting, is the readmission rates. So in the high flow group specifically, the longer the patients wore the therapy over that year's time, the lower the readmission rates were. So it's very interesting. And so going back to that point that I was originally making about how it was used in the hospital. In the past, high flow had been kind of pigeonholed as a reactive therapy that's used to help rescue a patient. And so this research shows that if you use it as an interventional therapy for a patient that might not be quite as sick, or as a therapy that it can be used in tandem with other therapies, that it can actually impact the quality of care that the patient is receiving and hopefully prevent the exacerbations and the readmission rates that these patients have.
So, you know, looking at that, they have nasal high flow in the hospital environment, but they're getting discharged. So obviously having nasal high flow in the home environment is helping prevent them from being readmitted to the hospital.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, in a manner of speaking, that's exactly what it's showing. And so to that point, like when you think about some of the therapies that are available to a patient that has a disease like COPD, and the therapies that reside within the hospital versus what they have available to them in the home, if you look at it, really what they have is up until you're having frequent exacerbations to where you're being readmitted consistently into the hospital, the only real option for treatment that patients have access to is just general self-management, but then also, you know, pharmacological. So we're talking about mucolytics, bronchodilators, nebulizers, short-acting beta antagonists, long-acting ones, antibiotics, things like that. And it's not only until the disease progresses to the point where they're in and out of the hospital quite frequently, are there options for them other than those pharmacological ones, those being things like supplemental oxygen, non-invasive ventilation. And that's really when you're getting into the tail end of stage 3 or even stage 4 COPD. And so where high flow can really make an impact, that where there has been kind of a gap and it really fills that gap, is in early stage 2 COPD patients where they may be utilizing some of those pharmacological agents. And so in doing that, they can be used for some of the things that we reference with those mechanisms, such as airway hydration, mobilizing those secretions, giving them that flow so their dyspnea is decreased, and hopefully in tandem with supplemental oxygen, whenever they may be using in addition to high flow, this will impact that vicious cycle of readmission and exacerbations that these patients are having.
Got it. And then, of course, you know, in the home environment, you guys have a nasal high flow product, and that's Airvo. Maybe you could tell me a bit about that.
Yeah. So essentially, Airvo is our high flow device, and you know, looking at how Airvo functions, it's a fully integrated device that really pairs all the mechanisms that I previously mentioned, those being airway hydration, respiratory support, supplemental oxygen, and of course the compliance factor with the nasal cannula. But really the way that the device works is it's fully integrated, so it's able to pull room air in. There's no compressor or any type of flow source that needs to be added to the product in order for the flow to generate. So it generates its flow on its own. If you need to bring in supplemental oxygen, there's a way to hook up a concentrator to the side of the device itself, so that way it can blend those FiO2s together. And then on the front of the device, we actually have a heated passover system. So when the air flows through the device before it goes to the patient interface, it will pick up that humidity and then ultimately deliver it through a fully integrated humidification system through the circuit and then the nasal cannula, so that the patient is getting that 100% relative humidity. The patient's getting the flow, and they will receive all the benefits high flow can deliver. And the beauty of the device is that it's small. It can sit bedside, so it's not going to take up a lot of space. It's just as quiet as a CPAP, which most people are pretty well aware of at this, you know, in this day and age. And so it's a very easy, simple use to device to operate and to benefit from.
And then, what are the types of patients that can use this? You mentioned COPD patients and some others. Maybe you could kind of go through the bulletize the different patient populations and how they can benefit from this.
Yeah, sure. So as far as Airvo, the type of patient it's used in, the research that's been done in high flow specifically is quite broad. And so from our label's perspective, or the Airvo's label, it's for any patient that can benefit from spontaneous breathing, patient can benefit from humidified, warmed gases. So it's a pretty wide variety of patients. There aren't specific indications that are on the label, but based on the research and some of the things that have been been conducted. It's from anything from, you know, there's research that I just mentioned, like Storgard did research in COPD patients. There's another study out there with Ray, by Ray. It was in Respiratory Medicine in 2010 that was done in bronchiectic patients, as well as a wide variety of research done in the tracheostomy space, pediatric tracheostomy, non-compliant CPAP for pediatrics. So basically patients that have, you can't get them to wear the mask because they're either claustrophobic or they can't keep the mask on their face. So they use high flow for non-compliant CPAP. And then just across the continuum of care, it's used in the ICU, it's used in the ED, it's used on the floor. And then outside the hospital, it's used by DMEs, it's used in skilled nursing, it's used in long-term care, it's used in hospice, pediatric hospice. The list goes on and on as far as the different, you know, disease states that high flow can potentially impact in a positive manner, as well as the setting in which they can be treated.
Got it. Now, how aware are respiratory HME providers of nasal high flow solutions like Airvo? Is this still kind of new territory for them?
It is. It is. And I would say, just depending upon the relationship that they have with the hospital, maybe they would have worked in a hospital in a previous life, but specifically looking at high flow in the home, it is 100% an emerging clinical opportunity as well as a business opportunity, because of all the areas that you can utilize the therapy, it's definitely something that people are just learning how it all works. And I think a lot of it has to do with some of the research that we've talked about, in that because a lot of the time high flow has been used so much in a very acute, unstable space, those patients obviously aren't patients that are fit to go home with such a device. And so now that there is more evidence coming out that it can be used on more chronic stable patients that are on that would require lower flows, lower oxygen levels, it really shows and sheds a new light on how these therapies can be treated in the home. So with that, I think more and more we're being asked of how this new Swiss Army life, that's kind of how I call high flow, can be utilized in these various settings. And so even just within the last year, the amount of information that we're being asked for and the people that are interested in getting involved in the therapy is expanding exponentially.
Wow. You know, it's interesting because I'm kind of seeing providers sitting in a really good position here. Physicians are having to contend with an outcomes-oriented healthcare environment. They don't want patients readmitted to the hospital. And now providers have yet another device where they can help physicians accomplish that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. The commercial reality is changing, and many care systems are moving away from the fee-for-service that is predominantly, that model has predominantly been the linchpin or the cornerstone for how healthcare has been driven. And it's gravitating from that towards a risk value-based care system. And so what that means is the health systems are viewing the entire cost of a patient across the continuum of care, and really looking at ways that not only can they decrease the exposure that they have to readmission rates and the cost that it has to manage the patient in the hospital, but then also looking at ways that they can manage these patients in a similar fashion or with new innovative therapies such as high flow in the home. And if they can provide clinical benefit, better quality of life to the patient, and reduce the healthcare costs, then obviously that's going to provide a win-win for both, you know, HME providers as well as hospital systems.
And you rattled off a number of entities that use nasal high flow. Mm-hmm. Who do you think would be the primary referral partners for a provider that might be offering nasal high flow solutions?
Sure. So I think it could really be broken down into two categories. So the main group, and this is something that even Fisher and Paykel on our end, we are spending a lot of time educating the clinical community. So the pulmonologist, internal medicine, general practice, but mainly we'll just focus on like pulmonologists and hospitalists that reside within the hospital, because they're going to be the ones that ultimately are going to see these patients coming through their system in and out every day, the readmittance. And so they're the ones that need to be educated and make sure that they understand the opportunity that something like high flow or something like Airvo can go home. And that's something that I've found within the last year doing our own little, as I mentioned, kind of data understanding and research is not something that's necessarily the case. They aren't aware that it's a home-based therapy as much as they could be. And so I think that's a real educational opportunity, both from our end, but also as HME providers, just letting them know that it's a possibility for them to come home, because they will ultimately be the ones that can prescribe it and network with the local HME providers to get these patients home. So that's one piece as the referral source. The other is just looking at the business side of things, as far as I know, you know, every HME has a little bit different setup, but you know, if you're with reside with under an ACO or vertically integrated system, this is something where if they are looking at minimizing the overall cost burden of the system, if there's shared risk involved, this is a great opportunity to talk with the hospital counterparts about ways to utilize a therapy such as high flow to impact that bottom line. And then also, even if it's external sources, things like skilled nursing facilities, we see high flow utilized in tracheostomy patients all the time, as well as cannula patients. Hospice is another one, because you can provide those high flows for end of life care that provide the patient that comfort towards end of life. And then even if you're like a medical equipment supplier, there's rental opportunities, a lot of different ways that you can put the therapy out there and make it available to patients at a respectable cost.
Got it. And it seems to me here, we've got the marketplace, we've got the therapy, we know it's proven, we know referral partners will want it, we know that payers will appreciate the outcomes, and we know that patients will appreciate the increased comfort and increased respiratory capability, for lack of a better description. Sure. How does a provider get started? How do they dive into this?
Yeah, so there's really two ways that they can kind of kick off, their high flow quest, if you want to call it that. The first would be, and the most recommended, is if they do have contact to their local F&P representative, that would be the easiest way. We're always happy to come out, provide education, provide any type of collateral that they may need in order to support the endeavor. So that would be number one. And in the event that for whatever reason they do not have contact to an F&P representative, my personal recommendation would be visit our website, specifically going to www.fphcare.com/US/home care. And if you follow your prompts to the My Airvo page and submit a product inquiry, that will actually come to me, and I will make sure that we get whoever needs any type of materials or education linked up with the local representative that way. So that's really the easiest way to do it, and then we're happy to support and provide any education that anyone may need.
Got it. And that URL again?
That URL, yes, it's www.fphcare.com/US/home care. And then again, yeah, just follow those prompts to the My Airvo section and then submit a product inquiry, and someone will get in touch with you very quickly.
Well, James, thanks very much for the time and the information. I appreciate you being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for the time, David. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again to James at Fisher & Paykel for telling us about nasal high flow therapy and the new care and business opportunities products such as F&P's Airvo are opening up for respiratory HME providers. You can get more information about that at www.fphcare.com/US/home care and follow the prompts to the My Airvo page where you can submit a product inquiry that'll go right to James and he can get you in contact with a local rep. All right. Don't forget to rate and review the HME Business Podcast. And please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. And if you want to stay on top of everything that is happening in the industry, make sure to check out hme-business.com and subscribe to eSource, our weekly e-newsletter there. And if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine there as well. Again, that website is hme-business.com. Of course, you can follow us on social media. We're at HME Business on both Facebook and Twitter, and I'm at Postacute News on Twitter. And lastly, if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me. Again, my Twitter is at Postacute News, and you can hit me up by email at DKO, P as in Paul, F as in Franklin, at 1105media.com. With that, we'll wrap things up for this episode. Thank you all very much for listening, and goodbye until the next HMEB podcast.